Hello and welcome to Brain Trust Live number 127.
This week on the podcast, new revelations in Palin Brawl 2014 reveal that the Palins rented that stretch Hummer just to drunkenly crash a stranger's birthday party.
As of this week, Ebola is a disease you can get without having gone to Liberia or Sierra Leone, so it's time to stop making out with strangers.
We know the Middle East is confusing, but are we sure we've gotten our geography right with the whole ISIS airstrike campaign?
And St. Louis cops and residents now disagree on whether you can be armed with a deadly sandwich.
This week in Senate election news, independent candidates are rousing the electorate's weirdest rabble.
And Dick Morris is still in the business of making totally wacko and inaccurate predictions.
We'll have all this and more.
This is Brain Trust Live. Hey guys, I'm Brent.
I'm Lila, and you can find us on the web at www.braintrustlive.com.
That's right.
That's where we'll be.
We're coming to you from Lila's new fancy computer,
yeah,
by the way.
This is on a brand new computer, so if this episode never makes it to air, it's because we don't know how to operate new computers. We were so, you know, obsessed with our six-year-old.
You had it last week.
I had it last week, and we didn't know how.
We opened up the new GarageBand, and it was panic time.
It looked terrifying, so we just didn't want to deal with it at all.
Right.
This week, we've just installed the old GarageBand on the new computer so that we didn't have to learn.
Yeah.
And we feel good about that.
Well, who likes learning?
Nobody.
Especially new programs like that. I've been attempting to not upgrade my iTunes since like 2003.
Yeah, Brent has been on like a long-term rampage.
There's nothing wrong with it. No. Sound like an old man. Like, you don't need to change that.
Well, every time they change iTunes, they move something that's really critical to your understanding of how iTunes works.
Exactly.
And like, you're not trying to change your whole routine just to listen to some...
But you know what I'm not doing? Using iTunes now because I just joined the...
Oh, yeah, you're a
Spotify
person
premium
now.
So I'm not looking at iTunes anymore.
Screw iTunes.
Sort of exciting.
I haven't opened iTunes
Very
in years.
Freeing.
Very freeing, yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. It's just a new
app. Now I can laugh in the face of the
Wait until Spotify has an upgrade, though.
I know, it's going to be
That is the
disaster.
Worst, because you are only using Spotify while driving. There's not another time that you're operating Spotify on your phone.
And once you don't know how to use something while you're driving,
that's
already causing
worst.
You to look at your phone anyway. It's just not a good scenario
that
you're in at this point.
Yeah, to be stuck.
Yikes.
In any case, this was a great week for one reason, which is that the police report of the Palin family brawl came out.
New news.
New.
This was our favorite story
news,
of a couple weeks ago, and it's our favorite story of this week, too. It's more important than Ebola, everyone.
More important, for sure.
For actual reasons, because Ebola's...
It's a story in that it's in the news. I don't know that it's much of a story in
right,
that it affects
not.
Your life.
Right.
It doesn't.
It does in the sense that you're all panicking right now.
Right, yeah, sure.
But should you be... Probably not.
Probably
but anyway.
Not. Anyway.
The Palins, God, this is just a real treat. Because there were a lot of sort of like conflicting stories about what actually happened now. But the police report is out, and now we know. And there were some really great tidbits in it.
Yes.
Just some of the best, actually.
So this was, by the way, the Palin family brawl where they showed up in a stretch Hummer limousine.
Hummer limo.
So if you're, picture that, please, outside of the...
Yes.
Of the excitement.
Because the first thing in the report takes note of that and says that when they arrived that there were several individuals that appeared to be yelling and quite upset, and the officers recognized Sarah and Todd Palin.
Right.
As you would.
As you would in Alaska, where they're the only celebrities.
Yeah. So then the next thing is an officer noticed that one of the males was not wearing a shirt and he was bloody. And that bloody shirtless person happened to be Track Palin.
Right.
Okay. And he was, quote, heavily intoxicated and belligerent at first.
I wonder what he was at second.
Well, yes, exactly.
Hard to know.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But the real excitement about, you know, regarding this party...
It's with the Palin ladies.
It's with the Palin ladies. You know, if you had told me the Track Palin was going to get into a weird brawl outside of a stretch Hummer limo, I'd be like, all right, yeah, sure.
Yeah.
What I didn't necessarily expect to have happen, although I guess I should have, was that Bristol and Willow Palin were going to be, like, trying to be bitch-slapping some people.
Yeah,
Because... What happened? So this is the birthday party of someone whose name is Corey Klingenmeyer.
Perfect.
It's Corey with a K. So,
Both Ks.
Both Ks. Yeah.
Uh-huh. I bet he has a K middle name too.
Oh God.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's Alaska.
Yeah.
So at the party, apparently Bristol goes and confronts some woman that Willow said pushed her.
Yes.
As you would, I guess, if
sure.
you were not thinking straight.
Right. If you were also belligerent.
Right. If you were belligerent and drunk as well, like your brother Track.
Yeah. So, but then according to Bristol, the host, Corey, pushed Bristol down to the ground and called her a slut over and over. And then someone stole Bristol's shoes and sunglasses.
Come on.
Why had she taken her shoes
off? The luck.
For one thing.
Well.
Because she was going to
bitch slap some woman.
Right. Exactly. But
she'd want to be wearing sunglasses.
But yeah. Also, Bristol, the truth hurts. Okay. I mean, like, you know, when you push someone and you're Bristol Palin, the correct response from that person is to call you a slut.
Right. That's
like, that's what,
that's all they have going for them at that point.
Right, exactly. That's what you would do.
Right. That's, especially because I, like, in my mind, like, with her having taken her shoes and sunglasses off, she's like prepping for a physical fight.
Yes. Correct.
Like, she's not just someone who's like, I'm going to give them a good talking to. Like, you don't take your shoes off to give someone a good talking to. So she was like,
or unless you're just the type of person that likes to walk around places barefoot,
Britney
which
Spears
could be like, right. And they're sort of like of the same different genre connotation, of person, yeah. Right.
To that as well. So in any case, apparently, so Bristol had come up to him saying that she was going to knock that bitch out. Mm, and that is how, that is what other witnesses claim about the situation.
Yeah.
And then apparently according to some other witnesses, Corey dragged her across the lawn by her legs and was calling her a slut and also a cunt.
Uh-huh.
So we're a classy collection of
people. But the other thing that is interesting here, because what I think that you can glean from a lot of these things, because is that Corey, this person who was having this birthday party, was like in the backyard with some party guests or whatever. And then also you hear in pieces of this that Bristol didn't know who Corey was.
Right.
So it sounds for all the world like the Palins collectively crashed someone's birthday party.
That's what they did.
Right?
In a stretch Hummer limo.
In a stretch Hummer limo, which is just too perfect. I know. If it stopped there, that's the story.
That's the story already.
Right? But it
then,
didn't.
It didn't
thankfully.
Stop there. No. So in any case, so it's not, Bristol basically is trying to defend the honor of her sister Willow by getting into a fist fight with
who,
Corey.
By the way, is probably honorless.
Correct.
I mean, that's not.
If there's one thing we've learned about the entire Palin family, as we will then later explain about
there's
Track
no
as
honor
well,
to be defended by anyone.
No, no one has any honor there. That's not a problem they're facing. Mm-mm. So in any case, so it sounds like Bristol basically like went up to this guy Corey that she doesn't know, was just like ranting about how she was going to bitch slap some woman at the party,
right?
Who was like, had like the ex girlfriend of Willow's ex boyfriend, right? Or like
she
something
was,
like
she
that
was in
that had
a fighting stance.
She was in a fighting stance, and then Corey did what I assume people in Alaska do in these situations.
Yeah.
Dragged her by her legs.
Dragged
right,
her across
treated
the yard.
Her like a cave woman. So.
Yeah. That's what happened.
That's what happened. So in any case, and first, apparently, you know, witnesses say that Corey was trying to be like, don't do anything. It's my birthday party. I don't want trouble or whatever. But then he himself took it upon him. He took it upon himself to cause all the trouble that he was trying to avoid.
Right.
By making a big scene. And then, apparently,
here's
other witnesses claim that she punched him in the face 6 times before a, quote, bunch of wives tackled her ass.
Yeah.
That was in
the police report.
In the police report.
They were probably using the best language they knew how at that point.
So true.
Right?
Then, so that's just what the Palin ladies are up to.
Right. Inside
Track
the party.
Palin, as we know, was up to his own shenanigans.
Different brand of
a different brand
doing.
Of brawling. Track Palin was having some sort of disagreement with someone about whether or not they could ride in his stretch limo, as I recall, or
unknown,
something like
unknown
that.
People, too,
unknown
by the way.
People. Yeah, just four guys.
Randos.
Four randos.
Uh-huh.
Wanted a ride in his stretch limo.
Yeah.
So he's like, he gets jumped outside. This is lame, by the way. This is a really lame situation to find yourself in. But you're Track Palin. You are the guy who showed up in a stretch Hummer limo.
Right.
And like, four guys jump you.
You laid this bed, Track
You laid
Palin.
This bed, Track Palin.
Right?
Exactly.
Man, or you made this bed, yes.
And also Todd Palin got in on that brawl.
Yeah, sure.
So basically what we have is we have the men fighting out front about rides in stretch limousines.
Right.
We have the women fighting out back with the birthday boy because he's trying to prevent her from slapping some other woman at the party.
Right.
No one knows where Sarah is this whole
right.
time. We assume she's in with the ladies because where else would she be? But so in any case, and this is like, this brawl that's happening at the stretch limo involves like some grown-ups too. It's not just Track Palin.
There's 40-year-olds.
There's 40-year-olds involved. And
right, because
the father of the guy who first attacked Track
was like
starts
urging
like
him
urging
to do
him,
it.
Yeah, cheering him on. These are all things that are happening at Alaska
barbecues.
I
was
barbecues.
Just about, this is a Saturday night.
This is it.
Whatever night it was.
What
doesn't
was
matter.
Different
it was
about this
some night of the week that happened.
Was that there was a stretch Hummer limo involved.
Yes.
As I would just assume that it's actually fairly difficult to drive a stretch Hummer limo for much of the year in Alaska. Because as much as a Hummer by itself might be great all-terrain vehicle, the stretch Hummer limo is not super wonderful on snowy days.
You probably
days.
Take any any opportunity to get out the stretch armor limo.
Exactly.
It doesn't always exist.
A fun summer party is the perfect time.
Oh, man.
But so this is a group of people that crashed a stranger's birthday party in a stretch armor limo.
Right.
That's what this police report.
And then got rightly attacked.
And then got attacked. Because they decided to try to start fights with the partygoers.
Showed up and wanted to slap somebody.
Yeah. Like,
you know what? You get deserved to be dragged across the lawn, right. And you get deserved to be jumped at your limo.
No, I mean, you've asked for it. That's what you've asked for.
God.
It seems it's like a great so solution good. To this problem, Bristol, for future reference. You see someone who's not treating your sister as respectfully as you'd like. You're the one with the stretch armor limo, so you're really able to leave at any moment.
Yeah. You leave your shoes on and you ask them to stop doing it.
Or, I have another thought, you leave.
Right, yeah.
You have the transportation, as we know. And if you leave, you don't have to offer anyone a ride in your stretch armor limo, because you can just be like, sorry, we're leaving.
Yeah.
We don't want to come back. So we can't return you to your car that is not a stretch armor limo. Right. I mean, it's so easy. It's so easy, guys. Not in Alaska.
Nope.
Not in Alaska.
Yikes.
Meanwhile, so you may have heard that our own U.S. based Ebola victim has passed away on Wednesday.
Right.
Thomas Eric Duncan passed away.
Despite my constantly telling you for the last month that Americans know how to treat Ebola.
Right. It turns out we don't.
We don't, actually.
Well, especially in Dallas, as it turns out. Because in Dallas, not only did Thomas Eric Duncan die, but then one of the nurses who was treating him now has Ebola.
Yes. And she was apparently taking the proper precautions.
All the precautions.
Yikes.
See? I,
your childhood fears.
My childhood fears are coming.
Were not as unfounded as...
No, they rarely are. Everything is as shitty as I expected to be most of the time. But yeah, so a nurse who had what they were calling extensive contact with Thomas Eric Duncan during his second hospital visit, not during the one where he walked in and they gave him antibiotics and then told him to leave.
Right, when he had a temperature of 103.
Exactly.
Yeah.
During the one where he was quarantined.
Right.
They had this nurse treating him. She was wearing gowns and gloves and masks and shields and whatever with her visits. But they claimed there was some sort of breach in protocol, and they didn't say what it was.
Well, I heard some guy, like, I heard that they were talking to somebody either from the NIH or the CDC or something this morning on Meet the Press, and he was saying that, like, you know, if you don't, even if you're wearing all those things, like, if you don't take proper precautions, like, when you take those things off, or when you know what I mean? Like, there's really sort of, like, and he said, like, if anything, that, like, hospitals really needed to sort of, like, redouble their efforts to sort of, like, make sure that they knew, like, what proper protocol was, like, that you can't just necessarily, like, put this thing on, like, if there's, like, fluids, or if you've, like, you know, like, you have to, you sort of, like, you also have to, like, know how to use these things, too. It's not just enough to sort of,
just wearing the gloves is not enough. You have to know how to dispose of the gloves.
Right. So, that's sort of, like, a thing that he was sort of, like, calling upon hospitals to sort of, like, redouble their efforts on, basically.
Right. Well, of course, they have no idea what to do, because when is the last time that this Dallas hospital treated Ebola? Never.
Well, right, never. And the other thing that is sort of, like, I mean, if you want to be someone who is, like, causing the alarm about this, which is basically, like, everyone sort of on Earth and in the media. If you're in the media, then
you're definitely wanting to be causing alarm.
And you want to run with something. But, I mean, like, we talked a while ago that there was, like, fear about how this was being spread. Because, like, supposedly, like, early on, too, like, some of the, like, aid workers were supposedly all wearing their freaking suits or whatever, too, that, like, contracted or whatever.
Wait,
and people have been fearing how this is how this gets spread at a certain point anyway. So it sort of, like, scares you to learn that someone in a hospital who is sort of supposedly prepared for this, who is, like, taking the proper precautions, like, in America, is coming down with this, because, like, that's not what you're looking for.
No, that's not what you're looking for. And she had all of the equipment that she needed to take those precautions.
Right, exactly.
You know, we're sort of assuming that everyone who's coming down with this in Africa is, like, lacking the proper equipment. And that's part of the issue is, you know, there's sanitation issues. There's the fact that the hospitals are under, you know, funded. All of those things are causing problems within the healthcare system in Africa, or at least in Liberia and Sierra Leone. But this isn't what you want to hear about Texas.
No.
That's not what you want to hear at all. There's someone else who was in, quote, close contact with this nurse who is now also being quarantined.
Yeah.
Maybe like her husband or something. I don't know. They were being really cagey about the details here. And then there was also recently a report of the first infection outside of Africa, which was in Spain. It was a nurse who was treating one of the Spanish missionaries who had been treating Ebola victims.
Yeah.
In, I think, Liberia.
Yeah.
And then
they killed her poor dog.
I know. There was a petition that they were circulating around the interwebs.
Yeah.
That people were trying to get them to not kill the dog, but they killed the dog.
Yeah. I mean, It's hard because, like, know. Obviously, like, you don't want... I mean, I'm a dog lover. I have my own dog. You hear her on the podcast a lot.
Right. You might hear her today.
Today, you could.
Yeah.
You know, but I mean, like, animals can carry it. I mean, right. The animals are who gave it to us. I mean, like, this is sort of, like...
Fucking animals.
Came from bushmeat, which sort of sounds disgusting. Ooh. But, like, that's how this sort of, like, initially, like, you know, has become, like, in various places in Africa, like, you know, a thing that, like, people have come down with. So... I sort of get it. It's sad and tragic, and I understand why you would want to start a petition for it. But it's also one of those things where it's like, you know, you're not trying to have all of Spain get Ebola either.
No.
So
no one wants that.
No.
Meanwhile, we had our own local brush with excitement, Ebola excitement.
And this gave me hope, actually. Right. It also sort of like made me feel like maybe everybody is definitely overreacting to this, which I still think that they probably are, but
sure,
like,
but why not overreact? Who's stopping us
better
from
to overreact? Because exactly. The whole don't underreact, you know, because we talked a lot about like this guy in Dallas who had gone to the hospital and sort of like, you know, got off a plane that, you know, where he had come from West Africa, and you know, like it seemed for all the world like he went in, he told them that he had come from Liberia, he said that
he told them all the things
he had a fever of 103 and they sent him home. So in Los Angeles, somebody who had
been in Liberia
or Western Africa, we don't have direct flights from Western Africa,
but someone who had come originally from
was like running
Liberia, Sierra Leone,
running a fever of some sort, and like it didn't even make it out of LAX without going straight to the hospital.
Yeah.
So I felt good about that.
He had a cold, turned out.
Yeah, right, exactly.
So it's okay. We're okay over here.
They, even when he was at the hospital, when they got him there, they were sort of like, well, we don't really think that he has Ebola, but like, I mean,
but
like,
why not be careful?
Let's just check it out. Why not?
Exactly.
Anyway.
And so in any case, especially with all these missteps that are going on in Dallas, and then just everyone's general fear about Ebola taking over the universe, John McCain has made some sort of... So an interesting change in position.
He's
suddenly very into the idea of appointing an Ebola czar. This is from someone who has made it his mission to, like, constantly harass the Obama administration about how many czars they're appointing.
Right.
They're big czar...
They were czar lovers. Especially
were czar lovers, too. They were czar.
Especially when Obama first came into office. Like, it wasn't so much as that he had too many czars. It was that he was having czars of things that they didn't like. Like, he had, like, a green czar.
Exactly.
They didn't like that. They had, you know, like, it was, so it was just sort of like, he was...
A politicized czar, anti-czar.
So John McCain was at the forefront of czar hating back in sort of, like, 2009.
Yeah.
But now... really thinks that we need to have an Ebola czar, which is probably the last thing that we need to have a czar of. But,
well, no, I mean, and...
It's not to say that we shouldn't be, you know...
Sure.
Try and...
But this is an oddly specific czar to have for a disease that three people currently have.
Especially
like, we need an asthma czar more than we need an Ebola czar.
Well, and you know what else? You know who could be dealing with this?
The Surgeon General.
The Surgeon General.
Except we don't have
one. We don't have because his cronies in the Senate have been holding up the nominee for ages.
Yeah. And you know who's responsible for the opposition there? The NRA, oddly.
Yeah, what's that?
Like, I'd
really like to know
about
the details about that.
Maybe. I don't want to know, really, because I think it'll depress me. But,
probably.
But in any case, he is not the only person that is sort of an anti-czar, had been historically on an anti-czar crusade and is now pro-Ebola czar.
Yeah.
Jack Kingston, who is a Republican from Georgia, who once introduced the Czar Accountability and Reform Act, which would cut off funding for czars, also insisted the Obama administration needed to appoint an Ebola czar. So this is like a thing that's going on in the House and in the Senate, where a bunch of nonsense talkers.
I love that the Czar Reform Act basically just does away with czars.
They're reforming it
by eliminating
it. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's a Czar Reform Act where they reform the funding mechanism by not having it anymore.
Yeah.
Czar Accountability and Reform Act.
Excuse me.
They like to put accountability into something that they're going to get rid of.
Yeah.
It's easy. It's
easy to have accountability for something that doesn't exist.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So in any case, this has been a sort of interesting, I think goes to show you that, you know, a lot of John McCain's constituents, probably a lot of Jack Kingston's constituents are just sort of like panicking their heads off about what to do about Ebola.
Because they're stupid.
Well, that's why.
I mean, sorry.
Yeah.
Like, that's it.
That's it. That's
they're uneducated people who are panicked about Ebola because they don't
because they're watching
know.
Fox News, and Fox News is panicking about
That's
Ebola.
It. Yeah. Even well, and also, you know what Fox News is also panicking about Ebola? And this is just like a real treat because they're basically talking about the reason that they're scared about Ebola is because the president and the CDC and all the health organizations or whatever are saying not to panic.
Right. So they insist on panicking
because they're like, well, we can't trust them on Benghazi, and we can't trust them on the IRS scandal, and we can't trust them on securing the border. So that means that we're all going to die of Ebola.
Yeah.
Like, seriously, those connections are being made. If you're not watching Fox News, that's what's happening over there.
The other thing that they are kind of running with is the idea that, like, hundreds of thousands of Ebola victims are going to be swarming the borders.
Coming across the border.
You know, trying to give you and your children Ebola.
Yeah.
Which is also not happening.
ISIS are coming across the border.
Yeah, no, everyone apparently is trying to get here. I learned recently that there's sort of a big wave of Cubans leaving and trying to get here as well.
Interesting. Also not happening.
Yeah. I mean, it...
Maybe. That's the most plausible
of any of them. Yeah. But these are all just things that they're using to kind of stoke our anti-immigrant fears.
Totally.
As if, by the way, our border security issues are being caused by West Africans.
How are they getting here? Well, and the other thing is there's no direct flights.
You can't even get here from West Africa that easily.
It's insane.
Like, come on.
Yeah.
In any case, interestingly enough, Liberia, there was an article today in the Times about this. So the Liberian army has a sort of negative reputation over in Liberia. They've participated in several coups, some violent actions. Mm-hmm. They are sort of known to be the kind of people that, like, rape and murder your mother and, like, for no reason knock down your door and, like, beat up your uncle and whatever.
It's their thing.
That's their thing. And people there refer to them as soldiers them because they begin sentences such as soldiers them came and beat up my uncle. So there's been sort of a long history of antagonism between the Liberian people and their military.
Yeah.
But because the military has sort of become the front lines of this fight to get, you know, to sort of control the Ebola outbreak.
Right.
They're sort of thinking of this within the Liberian military as a chance to rebrand.
They're going to save the Liberian people from Ebola and then
people will stop thinking about the time that they murdered their mother.
Their children. Whatever.
Exactly. So this has sort of been like a longer transition than just this, but this is sort of like they're seeing this as the moment that they can really make a breakthrough.
Yeah.
Because oddly, Liberians really like love the American military.
Yeah.
Liberia was founded by Americans. It was in the 1820s. We hatched this ridiculous plan to like send back all the freed slaves to Africa. Like that was going to be a thing that we could do.
Right.
And so obviously that was not a thing that we could do, but like also it created this nation that had like no real like African heritage. It's just sort of like random people from random places, some of whom were native to that area and some of whom definitely weren't,
right,
who are just like living in this weird country that was founded by America and is in Africa.
Yeah.
So in any case, there have been a lot of historical ties between America and Liberia because, well, another interesting fact about Liberia, the most important fact about Liberia, really, they're the other country besides Myanmar that is on the American measurement system.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. They use feet and inches there and such.
They're doing it right.
So they're doing it right, at least that. But so in any case, the American military has sort of had people training the Liberian military on and off in there for years.
Yeah.
And there have been all these weird periods where the Liberian military has had to be disbanded
because
people didn't trust them and they were having coups and whatnot. The decision by Obama to send all these American troops in to help them fight the Ebola epidemic has sort of had this other, you know, effect where the Liberian military is now sort of thinking of this as their chance.
Right.
To, like, really look like helpful people. Like, really give themselves more of, like, a National Guard kind of reputation instead of just being, like, horrifying people that, like, come and murder your family members. And also the Liberian general is an American-trained general. He's often flying off to the U.S. for various training things and whatever. But until very recently, the Liberian military, it didn't require you to have any sort of school diplomas. There was no basic training.
Right.
Like, part of the issue there has always been that no one was training the military. So, like, you can't really... You just hand a bunch of teenage boys guns, and then you're like, protect everyone.
That's not a plan. No.
So, in any case, for the first time in... since the 60s, there were Liberian soldiers that were dispatched to do peacekeeping in Mali last year. So that was sort of the first step, I think, in the right direction. But now they're sort of hoping that this Ebola situation will kind of rebrand them. And, you know, they're using it as a chance
helpers
to work with the American military so that they look like the kind of people that can work with the American military so that people won't hate them.
Yeah.
There have been some issues with them because they've been trying to basically, like, quarantine entire towns. There have been some violent outbreaks. Yeah, sure. And, you know, the soldiers are not really that well trained to deal with these situations. And everyone there is panicking as they
doctors,
should be.
They're soldiers.
Exactly.
But you also probably can't blame them for wanting to quarantine the towns either. I mean,
these, you know, they'll get, what will happen is they'll get orders to do that and they'll go in with too much force. And then the people in the town will be like, fuck you. You're the fucking military. And then everyone panics and people die. Yeah. But so in any case, this is sort of an interesting.
It really is.
An interesting sort of, I don't
like thousands of people dying to like help your image.
Exactly. Ebola as a PR fix is at the very least, maybe it will also change the way that soldiers themselves approach Liberian people.
Yeah, exactly.
That's kind of the problem. It'll change what they see their mission being, which is important. And in the most tragic news of the whole West Africa Ebola situation, there's a chance there's going to be a bit of a run on chocolate.
There's a chocolate situation.
There's a chocolate situation.
Yeah. Because the Ivory Coast, which is the world's largest producer of cacao, which is the ingredient in chocolate, they've shut down their borders with Liberia and Guinea because of the Ebola outbreak. So we're having some chocolate issues.
Yeah. So they produce about 33% of the world's chocolate.
Yeah.
And Ghana produces another, 30% or something like that. But
15%.
But I think their workforce oftentimes crosses borders to get there because it's like a harvest season or whatever.
So there's no workforce to pick the cacao.
Right. So Liberian Guinea being out of the picture is problematic because now no one's going to be there to pick the cacao that's needed for our candy bars.
Right.
So oddly, the World Cocoa Foundation is collecting donations from big chocolate conglomerates like Nestle and Mars and stuff like that for their response to Ebola initiative.
Yeah.
Which they are starting because they basically need the Ebola situation to get under control so that they can continue to produce chocolate at a rate that people expect chocolate. But there's sort of already concerns that there's going to be like a price increase on chocolate, which is tragedy.
Yeah.
I recently watched this thing on YouTube, by the way, like you do, which was about this. It was about somebody, I think in Ivory Coast, who grows cacao beans and is like one of the people that like some big conglomerate buys from and had never tasted chocolate.
Oh,
he was like, I don't know what white people use this for, but and then he shares it with like some of his friends who also like help pick cacao or whatever.
That's right. I mean, if you're only picking cacao and you're not eating chocolate, the two things don't even have, they hardly have relation to each other in taste anyway. Do you know what I mean?
Were like eating it though and being like, this must be why white people are so healthy and things like that. They were saying things like that as they ate it because it was just like,
they didn't know.
They'd never had chocolate. It tastes delicious. It seems like something that delicious should be healthy for you.
No. Clearly they don't know. Things that are that delicious are always that bad.
Right. So true.
Yeah.
But in any case, I thought that was funny that a lot of the people who produce cacao, I mean, it's tragic too, because chocolate's delicious. But some of them hated it. Some of them were like, ew, why would anyone want to eat this?
Well, maybe they gave them bad chocolate. There's bad chocolate out there.
There's bad chocolate out there. I hope that the people that were acting as chocolate ambassadors to the people that grow cacao beans
would have given
them high quality Swiss chocolate or something. I mean, for God's sakes, people. I think the guy, it was somebody who was there speaking French with them. It wasn't just some rando.
All right, okay.
So, like, come on.
Good. Okay,
you know,
good.
All right. You know. In any case, ISIS just continues to take over the whole world.
There's been a lot of sort of recent talk lately about what exactly is going on with these airstrikes that we're doing. Because we've been at them for 2 months, and seemingly they haven't done a damn lick of good.
Zero licks.
Yeah, exactly. So, of course, you know, it's causing everyone to be like, we need boots on the ground and we need more of a coalition and blah, blah, blah. And who knows what the answer is? I mean, maybe that is the answer. I don't like that being the answer, but
I've decided it's not
the answer. It's basically we've done nothing in these 2 months of airstrikes.
Right.
I mean, at least to deter them. I mean, I think we've probably killed some people.
Right.
But I mean,
that hasn't stopped ISIS from,
they are still basically like taking over the Syrian and Turkish border.
Yeah.
Like, that's basically almost gone at this point. I mean,
yeah, no, they control something like 95 miles of the border now or something, or they're about to.
Right. Meanwhile,
they have all of Anbar province, essentially. They have 80% of Anbar province. They are sort of on their way to having 100% of Anbar province.
Right,
they're making inroads in the sort of next biggest city that they don't have, which is called Haditha, I think. But I never
want
to say anything.
Turkey
there, I never know.
Sits with all of the military equipment that we gave to them right across the border.
Not trying to be involved.
Not having any involvement. Literally just like watching it all play out, which is sort of like, I mean, come on, people. You're A, it's your country.
It's your border.
B, you're supposed to be one of our allies. Yeah. C, don't make us come in there and spend all of our military shit when you've when it's...
Right, it's
yours is ours anyway.
Yeah.
It's like, you just shoot off some guns or something. I know you have them. Do something.
Do something.
Turkey. God.
Yeah,
but anyway, they're not.
They're not.
No interest.
And, of course, we're still having major problems where the Iraqi military is just sort of, like, quitting on the job.
Anything. I know. And everybody is saying that Baghdad is not going to get taken because the Iraqi security forces have, like, full control of Baghdad right now. But it's like, the Iraqi security forces are, like, removing their uniforms and just, like, fleeing into, you know, away from their
posts. They're just walking away.
I mean, like, that's... Don't tell me that they're not going to take Baghdad because the Iraqi security forces
have it. Chuck Hagel was saying, like, they're definitely not going to take Baghdad. And then everyone sort of admitted that if they take the airport, they've taken Baghdad. Like, it's the airport. Without the airport, the American military is really what's securing Baghdad, I think.
Right.
And without the airport, they're not doing that. So, like, and they're very close to the airport. So that's problematic.
Yeah, they're close to
Baghdad. Anbar province is right next to Baghdad, and they are only a few miles from the airport. So that's problematic. Really, everything is problematic about what's going on there. And now, of course, the FBI and DHS are wandering around pretending like there's some sort of, like, copycat concern locally, like that some, like, Americans are suddenly going to be, like, you know, facing terrorist attacks because people are going to be like, well, this is a great idea.
I don't
even want to know how we're going to respond to that.
Yeah, Lord only knows.
It's like, I already have Ebola to worry about.
I know.
I don't have time for terrorism.
No.
I have no time for terrorism.
No, not at all.
So in any case, that's still a mess.
That's not great.
And nothing new has really happened other than that things have gotten worse.
Right, exactly.
It's not like we've come up with a plan.
Right, it's not even that they've gotten worse so much as that they just have gone unchanged.
Exactly.
And you would think that after sort of, like, constant airstrikes, and we do have allies in this. I mean, France has been doing airstrikes.
Yeah.
You know, some of these, it's just sort of like, what are we airstriking over there?
I know.
I'm confused about what we're airstriking.
Well, and I will say I'm sort of happy that, you know, the Iraqi military hasn't done this, but a lot of the sort of local fighters have been calling for the American military to come in with boots on the ground. Right. And
but the Iraqi
military
government does not want to do that.
I mean, the Iraqi government does not want
to
do that,
right,
which I think is smart. From their perspective, I think it makes them look like they don't have control of their own country if they need to call Americans.
But
in.
Do they though? I mean,
no,
they don't.
That's, but I mean, we don't want to have to have control of it.
No,
it's a horrible place to have control of.
Right.
If there's anything we've learned from our last experiment there, it's that's not a place we want control of.
No.
It is a mess.
No.
And, like, I'm glad that we're at least sort of being, like, no to boots on the ground in a way that sounds like we're sort of able to be, like, figure your shit out. Like, sorry we fucked this shit up for you.
My guess, like, in this upsets me to say the words, but...
you think we go in?
Yep.
Like,
I just don't... And maybe he's... Maybe Obama is so, you know, going to do it, that he will never do it.
I think that would be such a foolish move politically for him.
It's a fool's errand.
It's a fool's errand. No, because, like, I think, and maybe he knows this and maybe he doesn't, because there's always that chance.
Yeah.
But I feel like the best case scenario there is we go in and then it's, like, the end of the war again, and, like, what do we do with this country that's lawless, that has no...
I know.
You know, it's not a country that feels any sort of sense of political unity with itself. It's not a country that you can sort of help create a government. We've realized that there are too many sort of deep wounds going on from the Saddam era and from the war era, and, you know, there's no way for us to establish order just by going in,
even though we
like to feel like that's a thing that we like to do. I think that there are people who have an incentive to create order there in a much more direct way than we do, that are on the border of that country and maybe have more of sort of an insight as to how this could happen.
Right.
But, like, to go in there again and try to preserve this nation that, like, has been nothing but shitty to be involved with this whole time, that we, you know, that we stupidly destabilized in the first place. Like, we have proven in the last decade that we are not able to stabilize that country. I'm hoping that maybe the Obama administration has realized that, like, they only end up with a headache here. They don't end up with a fix for anything, you know?
I agree. I just think that, I don't know, I just... Much like the Republicans on Fox News, I don't know if I trust him to get this one right.
I mean...
Some things I trust him to get right.
Right.
I just... I don't...
Yeah, no,
it seems like he could be talked into going to do this, thinking that it's some sort of, like, legacy thing, and he doesn't want the rise of ISIS to have happened on his watch.
Right.
And that he thinks that there's probably actually not that many of them, and similar to how we went in the first time, he's probably going to get told by commanders that they could go and they could do it, and they could do it quickly, and that's sort of like... But even if you get rid of ISIS quickly, you have still not fixed the general problem, and I think that's what everyone is ignoring in this situation, and that's why we have this problem currently, and that's what they need to deal with. Now, they probably do need to deal with ISIS, obviously, at the same time, because, like, they're a real problem.
No, but there's a vacuum there. That's where this all started.
Right.
The problem doesn't exist without a power vacuum.
Right.
How can they fix the power vacuum? I feel like whether or not ISIS is there, we independently, the way that we've been operating in the Middle East, can't fix the power vacuum. Right. That's what we know.
Right.
If there's anything that we know, and
because it's not just even an Iraq problem, it's a Syria problem. It's apparently a Turkey problem.
There are some really nasty dictators who also have this problem, and I don't understand how this is. You know, how we're the ones who like would have to go in and fix this for them. Like Assad is not just like some slouch.
Right.
He's a fucking crazy dictator.
Right.
So, like, why is it that it's suddenly on us to stabilize the region?
Well, and that's what I don't...
If he doesn't benefit from the region being stabilized enough to figure some shit out and to talk to some other nasty leaders from that area, then why is it on us?
Right. Well, and the thing that is different about them that would make you think that some of these leaders of these countries would want to, like, deal with them is because their intent is to take over those countries.
Yeah.
Whereas... You know, when we were sort of, like, initially dealing with Al-Qaeda, like, their intent, at least
partially... Right, was just to be troublemakers.
...was to be troublemakers and to kill us.
Right.
ISIS wants to take over the entire area. I mean, all of these countries should be worried about this. Because, you know, if they get into Turkey, they're going to try and take over Turkey. If they get into Iran, they're going to try and take over... Like, Iran should be dealing with this.
Exactly.
Like, all these countries have the means to deal with this, and they're not doing it.
I think that ultimately those countries will be what... will have to be what changes the dynamic here. This is not a movement that poses a threat to us the way that Al-Qaeda did. It is a threat because it's annoying to have annoying people in charge of a country. But, like, it's not explicitly just a terrorist organization the way that Al-Qaeda was. It's not there just to cause trouble for
Americans. It has a different end game.
It has a very different end game. And it's not an end game that we necessarily should be the ones to tell them they can't have.
Agreed.
It's one that people in the region should be able to sort of argue for or against. Because ultimately, you don't want to have an unfriendly nation, obviously, ever. You don't want to allow the formation of an unfriendly nation. But, like, I don't think that we gain a friendly nation by getting involved ourselves. And I think that we don't really understand... We never understand what's going on in the Middle East because it's so fucking complicated.
Yeah.
And, like, we've already made all the missteps that we would make in this situation. And so we know that they're missteps already.
Right.
Like, what we don't know is what a thing to do would be that would not be a misstep.
Right, that would work.
Right.
Yeah.
And, like, why do we need to... We're just going to trying the same things where we send troops on the ground and then just reestablish this vacuum so that a new crazy person can step into it?
No, that's not the answer.
It's not the answer.
No.
In any case.
Oh, boy.
Moving on. Domestic news. We're out of the water.
Yeah.
Another cop shooting
in St. Louis. Like 20 minutes away from Ferguson.
Yeah, just... And this time it was an off-duty cop.
Yes.
Who
was working a second job as for a private security company.
A thing that I want to talk about sometime on the podcast, which is A, cops needing second jobs. And
yes.
B, cops being allowed to have second jobs in security...
That are cop-like. Yeah.
Are they allowed to carry their guns and badges on these jobs?
Right,
in New York City, you're allowed to hire off-duty uniformed cops as security.
Is that
something that you're allowed to do in St. Louis? Because
that
has always struck me as a kind of weird situation, because it's sort of like a only semi-lawless land to find yourself in.
Yeah. So this one is a little interesting because the reports of what happened here...
Very drastically, wildly.
I mean, just they could not be. I mean, the dichotomy of these two stories is like literally they're on two different like universes, basically happening here. So, because what happened supposedly is at least what the police are saying is that the police say that there were four pedestrians that fled after they were stopped by this off-duty officer. It was like at 7:30 on Wednesday. Okay. So the officer chased one of them, who was later identified as Von Derrick Myers Jr., which is the person who was ultimately shot. And so they claimed that that teenager jumped out of some bushes and there was a struggle, and then he ran off and pulled a gun and actually shot the gun before the gun was jammed, and then the officer returned fire. That's the police story.
Right.
The story from other witnesses, who are all
family members,
who, not that family members are just like inherently liars.
Right. But
their story is that he was walking down the street
holding
and
a sandwich.
He didn't have a gun, but he had a sandwich after having walked out of a supermarket.
Right.
Or a gas station, I think, or something like that.
So, I would love to know, like, the difference between the visual of a gun and a sandwich is a real...
Yeah.
It's a wide disparity.
Right. So the next day, the police chief had a press conference and sort of, like, retold the story, like, this as this was the story. Supposedly, in the scuffle, Von Derrick's sweatshirt came off, and the officer was able to very clearly see that he was armed. You know?
Right.
I don't know. It's a very sort of like he said, she said
right.
at this point, basically.
What's sort of important about it now is that it has kind of reignited a lot of the Ferguson protests.
A lot of protests.
Because it is sort of an unfortunate thing to have happen so close to Ferguson.
Right. Well, and the other thing is just like so that similar. I think that like even if, I don't know. I mean, like, obviously, if your life is threatened, like, I get that you are sort of, like, taught as a police officer that you are supposed to take, you know, the measures that he took. But, like, when you hear some of these details, like, even regardless of, like, what exactly happened, like, everyone is saying, and even the police at this point are saying that he shot him 16 or 17 times.
Right.
Like, you hear some, like, I just feel like at some point, like, even if he had shot at him at one point, like, if his gun had jammed, which is what they're saying, like, I just feel like the amount of, like, brutality that, like, comes out of some of these situations just seems to be, like, so outside of what you would feel like as a rational person would be a rational response, I guess. And I feel like, regardless of what happened in the situation, I feel like that is ultimately what, like, I think sets people off. Because, like, I think the mindset is whether he had a gun or a sandwich, it's just sort of like, was this the right response to either of those situations?
Yeah.
And, like, I think that's what people get angry about.
Yeah, well, and this is a cop who's not on duty, so this is not...
Well, right.
Even
did this kid even know that he was
in the line of fire? Right? Did
he exactly?
Like, I don't. You know, did he know that this guy was a cop? Did he know that he wasn't on duty? Did he know all these things? And then also, like, once the guy's gun has jammed, what is the harm in like if you need to somehow sort of keep him from further attacking? Like, what if you like shot him in the leg or something? Like something a non-deadly shot would have defused the situation.
And that's what I feel like also goes to, and that's just not even that goes to sort of like what how police are taught in this situation
exactly.
too. Because supposedly, and I learned this through the Ferguson situation, that if an officer is supposedly like threatened in any way, shape, or form, they are not supposed to actually like either shoot at the leg or shoot at the shoulder or whatever. They are supposed to shoot to kill, which to me seems like, I mean, I don't like that.
No,
I on some level get it, I guess.
Sure,
but
right.
Like, I mean, it just seems sort of like it seems like the wrong response to me.
Well, and it especially seems like the wrong response when it is going like when it's going to get sort of used to such an extreme in these situations.
Well, right, exactly.
I'm sure there's an element to this story where, like, you probably get shot more times as a young black man than you do as, like, a young white woman, you know?
Oh, yeah,
like,
for sure.
I think they've done
some recent studies on that, actually, too. Like, how more likely you are as a black male
you're
to
not going
to
get shot 16 times as a white woman,
no.
you know, in these situations. That's just not going to happen to you.
No.
Like, there's not a circumstance in which that much brutality is needed to take out the threat.
Yeah, exactly.
But there's something sort of disrespectful about treating, like, some dumb teenager like he's some army,
right.
you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Like, that sort of blows what was happening out of proportion anyway, which is, I think, why protesters are still sort of, like, discussing this. As,
yeah,
you know.
Totally.
So, in any case, that's more bad news for the St. Louis Police Department.
And for humanity.
And for humanity.
God.
Right? God, ugh, these people. Man. And anyway.
So, it's our weekly Senate update.
Thank God. Election times are coming.
I know. We've been doing this for a while. And it's getting awesome.
It's getting awesome,
because,
yeah.
You know, it's been sort of like real... We've been bringing you a lot of tragic news about the Democrats' chances in the Senate. But some weird things are going on, and due in large part to everyone's just rage at both Democrats and Republicans, which, yeah, I think is a little misplaced because, I mean, granted, the Democrats aren't always getting it right, but let's face it, it's the Republicans who are trying to screw everything over. It's their plan. They've said
their
it's
plan
their plan.
Is to not pass things.
So, like, to be mad at the Democrats for not doing anything, I think is sort of the wrong thing to do. Regardless,
yes.
Even though people are mad at both parties, it's helping the Democrats, because what is happening now, and we're seeing this in a few places, is that there are some interesting third-party candidates who are, in some cases, potentially even going to win,
right.
But in the cases where they're not going to win, at least playing spoiler.
Yeah.
And the first place is South Dakota, which is fascinating, because this is a Democratic seat that the Republicans thought for sure that they would, that would be a pickup, and also sort of like, if it isn't a pickup for them, is become sort of like borderline impossible for them to keep it, because I think they need, right, like what, 5 or 6 seats, and this was one of the ones that they sort of felt like
they,
like this
was just
and Arkansas
loss.
And like Alaska and I think like West Virginia were some of the ones that they sort of like felt like were locks to like get a pickup on,
yeah,
like that currently have like Democratic senators in right now, because this is like Tim Johnson's seat, I think, and he's retiring. So,
and for a long time, the Republican running that race, Mike Rounds, was just sort of like,
oh,
walking around like he'd already won the thing.
The Democratic senatorial campaign has not cared less about this.
Rick Wyland, who's running against him for the Democrats, actually called him the soon to be senator in an early debate. Like,
right,
they there was like not even a question,
right,
that this race was going to him,
right, until an independent entered
until
the race.
Larry Pressler, who,
right,
is a former GOP senator himself.
Right. But is a moderate, but and has said that he may caucus with the Democrats. Again, he's one of these sort of, like, I think he'll,
right,
wait to see
he'll
who's in power,
who,
probably.
With whoever.
But it is almost right now, like, a 3-way dead heat.
Yeah.
Right now. And the Democrats, interestingly, for the first time, decided to spend money there, and they didn't spend it in favor of the Democratic candidate. It's an attack ad against the Republican, because they don't care.
They don't care who wins.
They don't care who wins, as long as it's not the Republican who,
yeah,
wins.
And they spent $1 million.
That's a lot.
In the
South
Dakota media market is
a lot of money. Yeah.
And there's a super PAC that's also put in $1 million to support the Democrat there. So, like, there's suddenly all of this money, like millions of dollars have flown in on the anti-Republican side.
Right.
To this race, because it's basically a dead heat between 3 candidates. And I think that there's a 4th independent candidate who's also getting a chunk of the vote.
Yeah.
So it's just like a wild card race.
Yeah.
And a lot of it has to do, so they're mostly running attack ads at this point in this,
yeah,
in this race.
Yeah.
But it all has to do, so Rounds was the governor of South Dakota.
Right.
Mike Rounds, and he was the governor while there was this program that went on where you could get a green card if you had spent $500,000 invested in like some sort of US project. Like if you had a project in the US and you spent $500,000,
right,
or more on it, you could get a green card. And there were some issues with the program, nothing like super glaring, but it's just been sort of like this controversy that's been brewing there for a while.
Right.
And so there have been, and he was like a big proponent of it during his tenure as governor. So like there's all this controversy swirling around him because of this like vague program that's like a really,
right,
rando thing that's going
on
in South Dakota.
Well, probably makes him seem like he just like wants to open the borders or something.
Exactly,
probably.
Yeah.
Like,
no, it's probably something ridiculous.
Yeah.
But so they're really running with that. And they, once they saw the opening, Democrats sort of jumped in,
yeah,
I mean, you know, the Democratic candidate there only has maybe, you know, just over a quarter of the vote, I think.
Right.
But the independent candidate has more than a third of the vote, I believe.
Yeah.
And Mike Rounds has about a third of the vote. I mean, it's like a very close,
it's close
race.
Yeah.
It is exciting times.
Yeah. But this could be, you know, and we've talked a lot about Kansas. I mean, there's no Democrat,
right,
there.
That's independent.
I think there is an independent, I think, running fairly well in that Alaska race, too.
Right.
We don't have any numbers on that. But also, you know, Kay Hagan was sort of, that was another one that I think Republicans sort of like felt like maybe they could get as a pickup. And that is still very close. I think anybody could win that. But Hagan for a long time has been sort of like just, those poll numbers have been pretty steady with,
yeah,
her in the lead by not very much. But interestingly, there is this guy who's named Sean Huff or Ho or something
like
that.
It's one of those names.
Yeah, but he's a libertarian candidate. and he is a 53-year-old pizza delivery guy, mm-hmm. and he is currently getting 7% of the vote.
And presumably, that's up from, I mean, his numbers are rising. Because it was 5% a couple weeks ago.
And so, I showed Lila, they showed a clip of a commercial that he did on Meet the Press this morning, and I showed it to Lila because I was like, you have to look at this. I was like, I think he might be like an actual slow person. No offense to, you know, anybody who may take offense to that. But I mean, like, he's sitting at, like, what I assume is in his home.
Right.
And he's, like, got, like, a half-empty, you know, pint of beer. And he's, like,
rambling,
hardly using English sentences to, like, say his words. And 7% of the vote, like, this pizza delivery guy may very well deliver North Carolina to Kay Hagan.
Yeah.
Which is
you've been waiting all day
perfect.
to make that joke.
Yeah. But also another, this is not the Senate any longer, but the Florida governor's race, which is close because we've got Charlie Crist, who's now back running as a Democrat, who's former Republican governor.
Come on.
And you've got Rick Scott, who's just
who's
a general
the current
asshole.
Republican governor the current, slash general
right,
asshole.
Exactly. And then, but there's this guy, also an independent, his name's Adrian Wiley, and he has 14% of the vote.
That's
and
huge.
Charlie, that's huge. That's a big
for
chunk.
And
that is almost the exact percentage that Charlie Crist is leading Rick Scott by, because he's ahead 43, or 45 to 37. So about half of that, I mean, is, if he were to not be in that race, I mean, you would have to assume that Rick Scott would be ahead there, too.
Yeah. No,
so,
that...
I mean, some libertarians, I think, probably... He probably steals some vote from Charlie Crist, too. Not
much. Well, especially because Charlie Crist is a Republican.
He's a Republican. So there's two Republicans
there's
on
two
the
Republicans
ballot.
There's two Republicans on the ballot here. It's very confusing for everyone.
Yeah.
One of them is a sort of more memorable kind of asshole because he's more recent.
Right.
And one of them is sort of an early days asshole. So you're having less, you know, less of a chance to really remember the glory
you
days of Charlie Crist.
You always love it just sort of like as a, you know, sort of like... snub to the other party when someone switches parties, but on the
but
same
then you hate it when
the
they
same,
run using
the,
your party
right, exactly at the same token you also don't really like Charlie Crist because like he's like a I mean he's
like
he's a Republican
asshole running as a Republican. Like don't steal a perfectly good Democratic race.
I loved it when he left and I think he spoke at like the last convention like you know in favor of Obama, so it was sort of like Charlie Crist he's a Democrat now, but then you're like, oh, wait, he's actually also kind of lame.
Yeah,
like,
well, he's terrible. He's a Republican. That's why...
So that's a problem.
That's a problem.
But anyway, so... But it looks for all the world, at least if things hold, which, of course, you never know at this point. But, I mean, like, Charlie Crist is ahead by a decent chunk there with that independent running at 14%, which is, like
that's
we said, high.
Huge.
So, in other news, this is interesting because it sort of looked like, initially, that Alison Lundgren Grimes was going to, like, be putting up a fight in Kentucky.
Right.
The last couple months...
Right,
really
it's
has
less like
it's
that.
Been looking less like that. I think everybody, it's just seemed like everyone had just decided that they were going to like go in for, you know, Mitch McConnell and just not care about themselves.
Try to keep the status quo as status quo.
I was
going to
say vote against their interests just like they've been doing for however long Mitch McConnell's been in the Senate, which is like 1,000 years.
Exactly.
So anyway, but there's a new poll out this week, which it's a lone poll. So everyone is sort of like trying to be cautious about this. But it is the same poll... It's a poll, and it has Alison Lundgren Grimes up by 2 points. It's within the margin of error. The same poll had her losing by 4 points last month. So regardless of whether this poll is an anomaly or not, the same polling is showing movement toward her. So whether she's winning or not, I think that there are signs of positivity in this because it's at least a 6-point swing from the last time they did this in September. And there were also... Regardless of how accurate the actual polling is, there were some interesting pieces within the poll that they polled.
There were some subgroups that they polled.
Because one thing that she has been really lagging behind McConnell in has been with men.
Right.
And she was, in September, when they did this poll, she was down by 10 points. She's now down by 1 point. Yeah. And also in the same polling in September, with the age group of 35 to 49, she was down by 11 points, and she's now ahead by 10, which
it's
I don't
like
necessarily
like every
middle-aged understand.
Person in Kentucky was
just
like, you know what?
Their vote. I know.
I'm a Democrat. I forgot.
Yeah. But it's interesting, too, because I think we may have actually even talked about this on the podcast, because I was not happy with this at the time, because Lundgren Grimes released this ad in September where she's, like, off skeet shooting.
Right.
And she's talking about, like, how she's, and it was all in an attempt to sort of like distance herself from Obama, because within the ad she's like, oh, I don't agree with Obama on guns or the EPA
it was an attack ad on Obama
like she was like a Republican basically, but like in the ad at the very end she goes, oh, and Mitch, that's not how you hold a gun, because there was that
There was a weird moment when Top Coburn retired. Mitch McConnell got on stage with some sort of musket.
Yeah, he brought him a musket for his, like, retirement gift.
It, like, super awkwardly.
It was, like, a very awkward moment.
Yeah.
So she played a clip of that and then showed herself, like, being a real, like, badass shooter. And there are a lot of prognosticators in Kentucky who really think that, like, at least in terms of the numbers with the men,
it's the thing. They were just like, wait a minute, we can't have a senator in there who doesn't know how to hold a gun.
Right.
Not here in Kentucky.
But this vaguely attractive woman who can skeet shoot is really the way to go.
Yeah, we had no idea.
Whatever works.
Whatever works,
I don't like it, but it was smart.
Yeah. What was less smart was earlier this week. So she was doing an interview with the Louisville Courier-Journal.
Right.
Because they were trying to decide who to endorse in that race.
I doubt she gets it. She's not going to be the one.
No. Because of they were never going to endorse her. Like,
well, her support is with the people who would potentially be running the Louisville newspaper. I mean,
that's true.
That's where she sort of, the other reason that she sort of released that ad is because she was trying to do better in rural areas.
Right.
So I think, like, maybe the Louisville paper would have endorsed her. Maybe. Who knows?
So in any case, they ask her whether she voted for President Obama in 2008 and 2012. Mm-hmm. She's someone who comes from a long line of Democrats. She's part of the Democratic establishment in that state. Like, she's not just like a rando who just wandered into politics.
She's an elected Democratic official in the state currently.
And I think her father was too. Like, she comes from a family of, like, prominent Democrats.
Yeah.
She just, like, refused to answer the question.
And she really
repeatedly
skirted around it in as many awkward ways as
you
can.
She was so, like, swirly and weird and awkward. Understandably, like, Obama's approval rating there is only 30%. He's not liked there.
I get it. Have an answer for that.
Come on. Well, and, you know, as the article that I was reading about this in the Washington Post points out, like, you can easily just be like, I did, but I'm not happy with how he did X, Y, and Z.
Right, exactly.
You don't have to then be like, I did, and now I approve of everything he did, and we love each other very much. Like, that's...
right, exactly.
That's
yeah.
not what you need to do.
No.
But so in any case, it was like this really weird, awkward moment where she tried to make it sound like she was a big Hillary fan.
Right.
Because, like, Clinton did win in North Carolina...
In Kentucky.
Right. Clinton did win in Kentucky the two times that he ran. So, like, I think she was trying to be like, see, I'm a Clinton gal.
Yeah.
But it was, like, weird because she obviously did vote for Obama in both of those elections.
She would have had to have.
And she just sort of, like, randomly tried to interject Hillary Clinton into the conversation.
Right.
And, like, then talk about how much she loved the Clintons and how it was better to be allied with the Clintons.
Yeah.
It was, like, a mess.
Yikes.
It was not... great.
It was not great. And there's video of that.
There's a video. It was a live streaming thing. Republicans put it up almost instantly.
Yeah. Not great.
Not great. Luckily, they are also saying dumb things.
About women still.
They don't know. They can't stop themselves. They literally don't know what they don't know.
Yeah.
They can't know that they're sexist, misogynistic assholes. And so because of that, they're having a hard time knowing what is right to say. This is in New Jersey, of all places, where...
Right.
Jeff Bell is trailing behind the incumbent Cory Booker for the Senate seat there. He's down by 20 points. So, like, sorry, guy. You're just not...
Right.
You're not going to
be a
senator.
He's running against, like, Cory Booker, too.
Yeah.
He's not losing for the reason that he thinks he's losing, which is where he got himself in trouble. Because he said, I've done a lot of thinking about this and looked at a lot of different polls. I think it has more to do with the rise in single women. Single mothers particularly are automatically Democrats... or Democratic because of the benefits. They need benefits to survive. And so that kind of weds them to the Democratic Party. So he said that single women are married to the Democrats and welfare queens.
Yeah.
And that's why he's losing to Cory Booker, not because he's probably a terrible candidate and people love Cory Booker.
Right. No, exactly. And then he also went on to say that it was the decline in marriage rates.
Ah, yes.
That was causing all of this. Single women who have never married and don't have children are also that way. If you take married women, they aren't that different from married men. So it's really a problem with the decline in marriage rates. These women don't have enough men telling them who to vote for.
Obviously.
But this is weird because it's, like, in New Jersey.
Right?
Like, I get that they sort of have a little bit of, like, an obnoxious machismo style, the Chris Christie style.
I was going to say, working for their governor.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, sort of version of misogyny going on there. But It doesn't make sense in a Senate race in New Jersey, which is not a Republican state, really.
No, it doesn't.
To go this route.
Right. Well, that's the other thing, too, that I feel like, you know, Republicans everywhere probably immediately just sort of were like, ugh, God, you know, like, hand to head at this point.
Right.
Because, like, at a certain point, like, if you were a person who was in New Jersey, who was very obviously going to lose to Cory Booker, like, if you're a national Republican or someone running in another state, like, you just want... Jeff Bell to keep his fucking trap shut.
Yeah, because then we got to start talking about Todd Akin again, and it's exhausting.
Right, folks. And it's exhausting. And also, like, once you're Jeff Bell and you're never going to win anyway, like,
it's... Don't say
it's,
a word.
Right, it's in the best interest of, like, the party that you belong to just go away.
Yeah.
Like, I mean...
Don't even try to start saying a thing about women.
No.
Don't start a sentence about them.
Don't do it.
Don't do it.
I'm sure he's been told.
Not before he went on this, like, random monologue. No, but I mean this is, like, sure quite a monologue. I'm it sure wasn't an often comment.
Since, is oh, what I meant.
I'm sure. Yes. I'm sure. Yes.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
In any case, it was a big week for gay marriage, as you might have noticed if you read the newspaper at all, because that's right. All anyone talked about.
It was sort of like a... It's funny, too, because, like, it was... it was a windfall. It's funny because, like, people talked about it, too, but, like, I also felt like there was sort of, like, a general sort of, like... yawn gay marriage
right
sort
that's
of like,
true
you know
we're like all right fine
get it because like it was actually like a very huge week because at the beginning of the week there were 19 states that had gay marriage and now it's 32. I mean it literally added 13 states or 30 or 31 depending on whether you're counting the ones that like haven't technically allowed it to even though it's like
it is constitutionally
right
legal
because
in 32 states.
And the way that that all sort of fell like it did was that you know the Supreme Court was sort of like potentially going to be hearing cases like coming out of a specific what was it the Fourth Circuit or something like that that had like that had ruled like some states banned unconstitutional.
There were five states that were that had their bans still in the courts that the Supreme
and
Court was looking at.
But like the federal courts like the appellate courts had overturned the bans.
Right.
And so the Supreme Court was going to have to decide
to hear the case.
But they decided to hear none of them. So all of the states that fall within that particular like district of courts, you know, are now it's all legal. And it's who is it?
Well, it was several different states that were not all in the same district of courts, but because all of the states in those districts
are required
to follow this ruling, suddenly all these new so the five states that they were gonna have appeals hearings for were Indiana, Utah, Oklahoma, Virginia, and Wisconsin. But because Kansas, North Carolina, South Carolina, West Virginia, Colorado, and Wyoming are in those federal circuits, they now also have to legalize gay marriage.
Right. Exactly. That's what it was. Yeah. Thank you. And then there were also court rulings this week, not by the Supreme Court, but by other, you know, court
other
systems
court ruling
that allowed that overturned bans that were they had in Idaho and Nevada and North Carolina.
Right.
So that brought us up to 32. 13 states this week. So up to 32. Now Idaho, I think, is somehow still
they're sleeping on it.
Not doing it.
No,
they're just decided that they're not into it,
but it's legal there.
It's legal.
You can't do it, but it's legal.
Right, exactly.
So at least we have that.
Yeah. So but all of
this
gay,
is really
gay marrying really is
pissing Mike Huckabee off.
Got under his
well
or whatever,
as we recall from when was the Values Voters Summit, like last week or week before.
Yeah.
Michelle Bachmann decided that gay marriage is no longer an issue. Michelle Bachmann, who once
said
it's boring. She once hid in the bushes during a pro-gay marriage rally or a pride rally or something like that because she was
so
spying
obsessed.
On gays.
Right.
But it's boring. It's boring to her. And because it's boring to her, it's infuriating to Mike Huckabee.
Because right.
Mike Huckabee lives for hating gay marriage. Like, that's what he's up to.
That's it.
He's otherwise a populist. He's made a career on being a guy who hates gay marriage.
Yeah.
And so he was on the American Family Association radio show and basically threatened to leave the party if they don't get their shit together on gay marriage soon, by which he means if they don't start going out and trying to get it banned.
Right. Well, and I think that he has sort of like, look, I get Mike Huckabee's rage on this. It's wrong, but I do you know what I mean?
Like, I understand
where his own personal rage is coming from.
Yeah.
I think it's super misplaced because like not only did he say that he would leave the party and become an independent, but he said I'm utterly exasperated with Republicans and the so-called leadership of the Republicans who have abdicated on this issue. If they continue this direction, they guarantee they're going to lose every election in the future.
And that's where he gets it wrong.
And that's where he gets it totally wrong. Yeah. I think that he is the person who has it completely backwards in this area. Because,
and that's the reason that these
reason
other Republicans have stopped talking about it.
Exactly.
Because they were
that's
suddenly like, wait a minute, we're never going to win another election again if we just sound like bigoted assholes on this issue that everyone agrees is...
Right.
You know, like, the rest of the country just agrees.
But Mike Huckabee can't see past his own anger over gay marriage.
No.
To recognize that all the other Republicans are actually doing the right thing for once on this.
Right.
By, like, not talking about it.
Yeah. No, but he'll be the one that ruins it for them. That's fine.
Perfect.
You know.
Yeah.
He wants to help them find Jesus. That's great.
Yep. That's it.
Go for it. In final news.
Final news. I mean, it's kind of
Hillary it's not Pillory, news.
Maybe.
It's not
really.
It's not news and it's not Hillary Pillory.
We can't really introduce it
I don't
it
think
as
we
such.
Can introduce this as Hillary
no,
Pillory.
No, but it's a great story that's ridiculous that kind of, like, indirectly involves Hillary Clinton.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yes.
So, anyway, there was, you may have heard about a story this week that Leon Panetta sort of, like, said some pretty disparaging things about President Obama. And it was sort of, like, all the, you know, talk of the blogosphere for a while anyway this week. And that specifically, he said that Obama has been too willing to, quote, step back and give up with when faced with challenges. And Panetta was in his cabinet. He was the head of, right. what, head of CIA, right? Isn't that what he did? Or something?
He was, yeah, I can't remember.
But he definitely
it was some security organization.
Right, exactly. So... Anyway, Dick Morris, who, you know, is not one to shy away from saying something ridiculous, nope. and who also...
Stuyvesant alum, by the way.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, interesting. Also, Clinton administration alum.
Yeah. Embarrassing alum.
Embarrassing, yeah.
For both of those.
Exactly. He's on a book tour right now, mind you, so he's probably just thinking of the most crazy things that he can say to sort of, like, make people pay attention to him. But anyway, he said in an interview, he said, I think Hillary put him up to it, speaking of Leon Panetta speaking ill of
right.
President Obama. He then went on to say, he said, what Panetta is doing is a hit, a contract killing for Hillary. Panetta, at core, is a Clinton person, not an Obama person. By accurately and truthfully describing the deliberations in the Obama cabinet, he makes Hillary look better and he makes Obama look worse. And I think he'll get his reward in heaven. I mean, what? What, God. Dick Morris?
Well, it's...
I mean, Dick Morris is not.
That's the kind of thing Dick Morris wants to be known
it is.
Saying. That's he's yeah. Dick Morris is up to trying to say shenanigan-y type
That's
nonsense.
Yes. Yeah. Well, he declared to. He was one of the early declarers of an imminent Romney win.
Oh yes,
in
he was. You're right
on Fox News.
Yes,
he just knew it.
He knew.
He was one of the leaders
his
of the,
truthiness
the gut
was,
feelings.
Yeah, he had a lot of gut feelings.
He did.
He has historically had a lot of wrong gut
wrong
feelings.
Gut feelings.
He's not a guy whose gut feelings are necessarily in any way indicative of
no.
things that happen.
No.
At all.
Reality.
Reality, exactly. In any case, that's the news this week.
Yeah.
We will see you next week when yep. we will hopefully... We'll have more Senate updates, and maybe
probably.
We'll have news besides Ebola, but probably not. Because
no. More people will have it by next
more
week.
More people will have it by next week.
Making a declaration.
Exactly. Yeah, that's a gut
a
feeling
truth.
That we can
yeah.
that we can get behind.
Yeah.
It's a sad truth, exactly. And it probably still won't mean that you're going to get it.
Nope. It won't.
But I will still worry about that, because yeah. that's the kind of person
you
I am.
You always have.
Yeah, I've always worried. Yeah, I'm a little annoyed that this has become, like, a thing now where, like, now you get... Like, I feel like I started the fashion of worrying about Ebola years ago.
Right, like,
and now people are ridiculing
ago.
Me for worrying about something that I've been worrying about for the last 25 years. Like, it's just not fair to me to put me in that position where now I look like a silly person who
right.
watches Fox News
right.
just because I've had this worry this whole
right.
time.
You would like to be able to be like, I told you so.
Exactly.
But you can't because then you're a nutcase.
Exactly. It's so infuriating. In any case, we'll see you next week.
Bye.
Bye.